From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And good afternoon, everybody. That's right, afternoon. We've crossed over that noon threshold here on this Saturday. I hope you're having a great start to a great weekend. What a week it's been. We're going to talk later with Caleb Blakesley. We've had more campaign stuff, debates. We've had more meet and greets. We've had more banquets and Lincoln days and the whole bit. And I'll be glad. I don't know about you. I love politics, but man, will I be glad when this primary season is over so we can settle and get back down to real life, whatever that is. We'll be talking to Kayla right after the bottom of the hour. But first, let me go through a few things that crept up on me here on the week. At NPR, National Public Radio, Uri Berliner said, "I am resigning from NPR. I cannot work in a newsroom where I am disparaged by a new CEO whose diverse views confirm the very problems at NPR that I cited in my free press essay." In other words, he's saying, look, I told you how bad it was, and you're not believing me, and now you're going to see people leaving NPR in droves. NPR has hired a left-wing activist who openly endorses censoring, deplatforming, and punching political opponents. She, yes, she, considers the First Amendment the number one challenge to controlling bad information. The American people should be paying for this. No, the American people should not be paying for this. NPR has become, as Elon Musk said, they've become a hard left propaganda machine that tolerates no dissent. I used to listen to NPR. What? You, NPR? Yeah, look, they were leftist. They were mostly Democrat. But in their reporting, they tried to be somewhat fair. I used to enjoy some of their shows that they did, their game shows that they did. But even that has become so coarse, so rabid. It's like they're competing with Colbert. You know, what you do on TV, we'll do it even better on the radio. And I don't think anybody's doing it better, and I don't think it's doing anybody any good. Let's talk about some comments coming out from the president this week about our wallets. "I have never minimized the challenge that the southern border presents." Well, maybe you should try. Are you admitting, sir, there is a challenge? I mean, this is more than just making sure everybody with the blue shirt stand over here and everybody with the red shirt stand over here. And, oh, you people carrying guns and knives, please not try to kill somebody in your first 90 days in our country. That would be so positive. Thank you. Craziness. It's absolute craziness. We will talk about the border again later, and we'll also talk about this, but Joe Biden is chiming in already. "We've had the most successful economy of any major economy in the world so far. I've been able to cut the federal deficit at the same exact time. I've already been delivering real results in a fiscally responsible way." And then somebody brought up, you know, the thing of, well, that's going to affect people with incomes over 400,000, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. And Joe Biden actually said this: "I hope you're all able to make $400,000. I never did." Joe, you've been making it for 3 years as of this past January 20th, and hopefully you won't make it anymore after this coming January the 20th. $400,000 is your salary, sir. You might want to recheck you know, your sources and everything before you get all crazy and numb and all that. In my category that I get to every once in a while, I define this as "you can't fix stupid." A standalone bill, who's saying this? Corinne Jean-Pierre. "A standalone bill would actually not help Israel and Ukraine. It would actually delay the needed aid that they obviously need to fight." Well, in our discussions today, I will tell you why I am still for funding any help that Israel needs and no more funding at all for Ukraine, unless some things change. And I don't see them changing. The Democrats are ready to pull the lever on the cash machine and send them some more money. Why should they change? They just need to stay the way they are. Look, you can't go outside the Constitution just because of time and effort and all the rest, Jean-Corinne. You just can't. You can't say, well, we're going to just take the Constitution and set it aside for a moment. I heard somebody bring that up. Let's don't revoke the Constitution. Let's don't even change it. Let's do this. Let's put a pause in it. Let's say for 60 days, the Constitution does not exist. Under what auspices are you going to arrest somebody if they commit a crime, if they don't pay their taxes? If a country decides they're going to attack us and we can't fight back because we can't enable our military because we're under a pause. I'm not sure where these people live. Jean-Corinne, when she first came to the podium as the press secretary, I thought maybe she was going to be a breath of fresh air, but she ends up being a throat full of the same old bile, and she just spits it out there with her slight accent. This is just nuts to me. Absolutely nuts. One-word warnings are not a believable foreign policy, and I'm saying that to the President of the United States. Now, this is after Joe Biden has given Iran billions of dollars, and he thinks don't is going to send a tough message. Don't. Somebody asked him at the end of one of his pressers the other day, do you have anything to say to Iran and their what they're doing with their money and because they've got more money now because we gave it to them? Do you have anything to say? And he leaned into the mic and he got that Clint Eastwood squinty eye look and he said, don't. Oh, that'll send them shaking. That'll get their knees knocking, sir. They'll be just rattling all over the place. Don't is a tough message. That is three things. It's ludicrous, it's dangerous, and it's insulting. It's all three. Most people boasting about the gleaming economy, according to Stephen Moore, are inside the Washington bubble, or they're nested inside their college faculty lounges. When nearly two out of three Americans say things are not going well for their personal financial situation, the don't worry, be happy bromide isn't the response most voters are looking for. Just say, don't worry, be happy. It's all going to come back. The president is on top of this. Well, the president has a limo to take him wherever he needs to go. The president's going to get his $400K this year. All of his checks will clear. And that, of course, is not including any extra money from under the table with his son, Beau, but with his son who's selling his paintings and trying to get more money for friends overseas. It's just, Hunter is just, he's a cancer. Hunter is a cancer running amok. What do you think Hunter's going to do this year? I'm equally concerned with what he's already done. Why are we not looking into this? Why are we not talking about this? Because the people that make the decisions on whether or not you bring somebody in, you sit them down, you wag your finger in their face, and you tell them how the cow ate the cabbage, most of the people that pull that kind of stuff off for the good of the country can't. Because they're stuck inside the bubble in Washington, D.C., and they can't function. I have great admiration for the people running for Congress right now, and we've got some good ones. Kayla was part of their debate they had the other night. We'll talk to her in a few minutes. But there's no way I would be in that number. No way. Number one, I don't want it. And number two, face it. You see Pat Miller on the ballot. Are you pulling that lever? I didn't think so. We'll be back with more straight ahead right here at WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and on the WOWO app.
Hey, welcome back. Don't forget Kayla Blakesley from Fort Wayne's Morning News. She's about 15 minutes away and she'll be here with us after the bottom of the hour. Katie Couric. I hadn't seen Katie Couric in a blue moon, and once I listened to her for about 3 minutes, I realized I didn't miss her all that much. It's been a good while since she's been around. It's been even longer since she was relevant, if that was ever part of her bag of tricks. She is the former network news anchor, was on for quite some time. She was invited by Bill Maher. Now, part of this is about her, and part of this is about Bill Maher. I'm still trying to figure out exactly where Mr. Maher is. I think Bill Maher, I think he is a leftist. I also think to some degree, he's a realist. I think he stops sometimes and looks around his living room after he's done a bit and listen to it again. Sometimes I think he looks around and says, what are we doing? Who are we? I mean, what side are we on? Do I have to pick a side? Well, on his back and forth, about 90 minutes with Katie Couric, I couldn't listen to it all because I value my eardrums. But when the topic turned to how we absorb and interpret news and politics, that's when Marr said that each political party believes the other is an existential threat and can't be trusted. To which Katie then said, but you don't think things changed so dramatically, Bill, when Donald Trump arrived on the scene? Because there's always been policy differences, but when Trump arrived on the scene, the decorum was gone. Sort of this level of basic decency evaporated, and you know, just complete falsehoods. In other words, everything that's going on right now in the country, that's just not good. It's Donald Trump's fault. He's not been in the White House now for almost 3.5 years. And the president that's there now began dismantling everything that Trump had accomplished in his first administration and in his first year. And Biden could not get the pen moving fast enough to stop the construction of the wall, to change how we let people in over our borders, to make things more lax relative to crime. This is just absolutely going to drive itself to a new level of you've got to be kidding me, because that's where we're headed. You have got to be kidding me. Donald Trump is to blame for all of the complete falsehoods. Yep, it's all Trump's fault. And isn't that easy for them, actually? If you could take all the ailments and wad them up and into one ball and throw it in the can and say, well, there they go. That was Trump's stuff. I wish I could do that with my indebtedness. You know, I wish when I write one check, even if it's the big one, if I'm writing my mortgage check for the month, I wish I could just say, now this is my mortgage, but it also incorporates everything about my house. My mortgages, my utilities are all in there. The lawn care services are all in there. Phone service. You can't do that. You have to pay for each and every one of them. Well, Bill Maher, to his credit, seemingly to me, my opinion, that's all, has gotten so sick of the Trump hatred on his side, and he's at least tried to understand what half of the country finds so appealing about the man. So he calmly came back to Couric, and he said, and I'm quoting Bill Maher, not to defend Trump, but to defend the people who still vote for him, because what they see on the other side to them is even more dangerous because it's closer to home. My kid is coming home from school and he thinks he's a racist. He's 5 foot. What have you been telling him? My boy thinks that maybe he's not a boy. But you know, those kinds of things are why they say, that's why I'm voting for Trump. A conservative guy once said to me, what you don't get about Trump is that we don't like him either. Now, that's not true for all people, but lots of people, it's like that. He's all that stands between us and madness. That's Bill Maher talking. That's their view. I would like that view presented. That view, not election deniers, but just try to understand why even the election denying thing is not a deal breaker for these people. And I think they're wrong, but I don't hate them, and they're not stupid. Well, the fact that Bill Maher does not hate us is yet another sign that he's not the ardent lefty he once was, or at least purported to be. Maybe it's because he's been mugged by reality one too many times. Or maybe it's simply because he's 68 and he couldn't care less attitude has become even more so. Now, I'm still conservative, but I will tell you that when I turn 69 this coming June, no cards, no flowers, no death threats, please. But when that all comes in, when I view things now, I do view them differently than I used to. And I try to be more tolerant than the other side. When I was in my 30s, I would grab a sign and run up to a crowd with an opposing view to mine and basically go, oh, yeah, well, regardless of what it was, whether it was a cause for life or taxation or Republicans versus Democrats, whatever it was. But it's certainly true that some Trump voters will do so grudgingly voting for him, but some absolutely love him. Why would that be? Well, briefly put, and this is taken from, I went back to some exit polling that came out of the Iowa caucuses, Trump shares their values and fights for people like them. He shares their values. Now, look, they hate the rich people that get all the breaks and they hate this. That. Is Trump not rich? One of the greatest things, I think, is his ability to be rich and to be quite rich. And yet at the same time, adapt this I'm just like you guys attitude. It's not easy to do. And Trump, I think, has had a great feeling on it. Well, squinty-eyed Katie Couric, though, was sitting there, and she has her own thoughts on the MAGA phenomenon in an insightful analysis. And I will tell you here what she said. This is Katie Couric. Socioeconomic disparities are a lot and lot class resentment. It is a lot an anti-intellectualism and anti-Jew elitism. And what is driving many of these anti-establishment Trump, which are Trump voters, they're anti-establishment voters. So I think that's a huge problem that we have to address. I don't think it's the fact that it is somebody is establishment or anti-establishment. I don't view that as real A and B. What I view it as is that sometimes we haven't had the chance to sit down and assess everything going on in our brains. I don't want knee-jerk reactions to everything. I don't want that. I'm going to come back to this after we talk to Kayla here, because she's coming up here in just a few minutes. And after I do my 9, 10, 12, 14 minutes with Kayla, because you never really know how many it's going to end up being. But after I do that, I'll be back with you, and we will talk through all that's going ahead on the program. So thank you for being with us. I appreciate you giving us a part of your Saturday, every Saturday. Remember, you can always go to our podcast and listen to what you missed. Or if you want to, you can just listen to it again, and that's always available to you at wowo.com. Look for the Pat Miller Program, and then click on my podcast. Hey, and welcome back. Very glad that you're here. Now, as I promised, as I do every week, there she is. She's sitting right here. I'm looking right at her. The beautiful, the lovely, the talented, the inimitable, the somewhat frustrated Kayla Blakesley.
All of the above. Yes, that's me. Hi, Pat.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm still trying to come down from this week. You know, we had this third district congressional debate. We had some super PAC ads drop. We've got this Democratic caucus that's taking place today, as you know. So there's just like been so much going on. And the way my producer and I always say is, and I'm sure most people feel like this, it's not just me, but you only have so many mental carts in your brain. Mine are all being used.
Yeah. I said something. I didn't use mental carts. That's a good picture. I need to use that next time. One day last week, Kim came up to me, and she's standing right in front of me, and she's talking to me about something that's coming up in a few days at church or our class or something. And I just kind of gave her a blank stare, and she says, "Are you ignoring me?" I said, "Not intentionally. I'm just looking for a place to file it, and there's no room."
There's no room. There's no room at the inn right now. Let's put it that way.
Let me say this, because I did not listen to all of it. I listened to everything except the last 10 minutes.
Oh, okay? You missed the best part of the debate.
Well, see, I'm going to pull it up and listen to it on the way home.
Okay.
But when I sat there and I listened to it, it seemed much more civil than before.
Pat, that was one of my big takeaways from this. I actually walked into the debate on Wednesday, because it's pre-taped at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We aired it on WoWo at 5 p.m. We also podcasted the whole thing. So if you did miss it or didn't listen to all of it, like someone over here, a.k.a. you, you can still download the podcast. You can listen to it anytime, anywhere, mobile device, online, WoWo.com, the whole thing. I was mentally, as a moderator, bracing myself for all of the rebuttals that we are going to have to grant. I was mentally bracing myself for, hey, like time, we're moving on. You know, I had psyched myself up for the fact that I might have to be the bulldog here in this particular scenario that we were dealing with. I think it's easier for me to be the bulldog than, let's say, Dirk Rowley from Wayne TV. He has to hold a very different kind of stature than I do with his role, with his job.
Right.
Same with Fred McKissick from the Journal-Gazette. Us three were the moderators. I also think Fred has to hold a very different kind of role than I do. I have different liberties than those guys do where I work versus where they work.
Well, you know, I'm short, fat, and ugly, but I can still be in broadcasting because of radio.
Yeah, so. You and me both, although I don't think I'm short.
You're none of those.
Or fat. fat or ugly.
No, well, you're at least not two of them.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
No, but
so yes, I was braced for all of that, Pat, and I was like, huh, wow, how nice. You know, they all the candidates came in, they shook each other's hands, came over and talked to all of us moderators, very chit chatty with each other, and then even during the debate, this was one miss of not being able to have a live audience, which there were still quite a handful of people there, whether that, we allowed family members and obviously each candidate's team could attend. So I bet there was maybe 20, 25 people in the room. Then, of course, us moderators and some TV crews, local media that, of course, was invited. I could not believe I was astonished by particularly Marlon Stutzman comes to mind. How much head nodding of like agreeance there was. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, hey, you know, I agree with Tim. Hey, I agree with Wendy. Like they were so cordial with each other. And I should point out for folks who are like, wait, when did this, you know, about this debate, it featured Andy Zay, Marlon Stutzman, Tim Smith, and Wendy Davis, four of your eight candidates seeking the congressional seat here in the third district, the seat that Jim Banks is vacating for a Senate run. But I was so shocked until that very last question.
Okay.
And that's why you have to go back
and listen. Which is what I will listen to on the way home.
Yeah, that last question. And I knew, I'm assuming the other moderators knew this too. We knew if there were going to be any kind of fireworks.
It was going to be then.
That last question.
Who asked it?
I did.
Okay. So was there a hint? I mean, as you were going into it, were you like wringing your hands like,
Mwah. I was, yes, that's what I said to my producer this morning. I was like, ha, 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 can't wait. You know, here's the thing. I actually came up with the question months back, and I modeled it off of that and what the RNC does. You know how they make your presidential candidates sign this document if they're going to appear on the debate stage that they will support the eventual nominee if it's not them,
right?
Okay, so I basically stole that from the RNC and asked, was going to initially ask all of the candidates, you know, you're one of eight. If you are not the candidate, would you support the nominee, you know, after May 7th? If you're not the one elected, would you support the nominee? Which I thought was already a great question. Well, going into the debate on Wednesday, we'd already kind of seen some attack ads come out, specifically by a super PAC that endorses Wendy Davis directed at Marlon Stutzman. Well, going into Wednesday's debate, two more super PAC attack ads dropped. They're PACs that I know support Marlon, and they were directed one at Wendy Davis, one at Tim Smith. And so I knew, because my phone was blowing up, that these candidates were salivating to talk about these super PAC ads, which they've already been discussed a little bit on my show. And so kind of at the very end, I decided to throw in a mention of the PAC ads as well with that last question, you know, of supporting the potential nominee if it's not you.
Right.
And Pat, that was like the match, you know, that started the fire, that lit the fire.
Now, was most of the vitriol that was in that question, was most of it thrown at one candidate? Or did it come from primarily one candidate thrown at all of them?
The three that really went at it were Tim, Marlon, and Wendy. Tim actually got asked that question first. So we alternated.
Right.
We had the candidates numbered 1, 2, 3, 4. And we started, first question went to number one. The next round of question, first line of question went to number two, so on and so forth. So this last question happened to fall on Tim Smith, where he was sitting. And the seats were drawn randomly when the candidates got there via a piece of paper in a bowl. Like we drew them randomly. So there was nothing hinky going on with how they were the seating arrangement. So Tim got this question last. Tim immediately, you know, made some comments about Marlon, then made some comments about Wendy. So immediately, as moderators going into it, we had decided that if any of the candidates mentioned one of their opponents by name, and they knew this, by the way, we would grant a 30-second rebuttal.
Okay. Your name is brought up. You have 30 seconds to rebut that position.
Correct. Right? Okay. So I let Tim speak his piece, granted Marlon then the 30-second rebuttal. Now, granted, Wendy's name had already been mentioned. So Marlon then also mentioned Wendy's name. Seemed like a lot of shade got thrown her way.
Like a round robin thing here? Well, my name got mentioned again. Do I get another 30
seconds? So I'm trying to keep track on my little, you know, notepad here, and I don't math well. Thank God we were working, you know, with like whole numbers here.
I didn't realize
here.
That math was a verb.
Yeah.
I don't math well.
It is in my vocabulary. Yeah. You know, so Marlon had his rebuttal. Wendy had her rebuttal. And, you know, at some point, I interjected and said, you know, listen, we could go round and round about this. Mm-hmm. You know, Wendy, sit tight. We're coming back to you, because she hadn't even been asked the question yet. We hadn't even got to this, you know, full round of questioning. Andy Zay popped in at one point and was like, yeah, Wendy, you've spoke your piece. Like it kind of got a little like I said, fireworks, you know, kind of went off. And I get it. Like I said, I knew these candidates were salivating to talk about this. And I think what really what it comes down to, and I actually had on the candidates on my show this past week after the debate to kind of dissect some of the things that were said. And quite frankly, things that I thought needed to be pressed on more because there were a few of those moments as well. And it took every ounce of my being, Pat, to like not make facial expressions, which I know that I did. I get it. I know. I can't help it. That's who I am. Right. And everyone knows the job that I do. So whatever. But it took every ounce of my being not to want to press and like further the conversation and the discussion. But I knew my role as a moderator, you know, so I sat there quiet. But the crux of this whole super PAC conversation, after talking to all the candidates, even after the debate, during the debate, what I really think it comes down to is just that all of these candidates, I think, really want voters to know about super PACs, how they work, where the money comes from. Now, Pat, do I think your average voter cares about that? I do not.
No.
I don't think they care really at all. And I know they
all they care about is the big colored picture with all the big print and what it says. They don't take time to look to see who's
correct. They're not going to take time to see what's the name of the PAC who sent it.
Right.
They're not going to take time to see where all that money came from. They just don't. And I wished I could say that to all of these candidates and be that blunt about it. And quite frankly, I might, because I'm tired of them all coming to me wanting to specifically talk about the attack ads to defend. Well, I didn't know that ad was going to be put out I'm not going to tell them to take it down. You know, like this bickering.
Can I give you my 30 seconds on that?
Sure. And it's your show.
I haven't brought this out at all. OK. And if you want to attach it to a particular person on the rostrum, go ahead. This nonsense. I had no idea that this flyer was going to come out. When the second flyer came out, I haven't even seen it till it showed up in my email, my phone mailbox today. I believe that about as far as I can throw this building. You go to Washington, D.C., and you sit down with a bunch of people from a PAC. And
you agree to accept the money.
And you have to be kind of brain dead not to know what you're getting into, because now at that point, your campaign and your voice and your image, they own it for the period of time that those flyers are going out. So don't expect them to send out something that says, you're the greatest thing since, you know, Martha Stewart and, you know, Mrs. Lincoln. I mean, you can't do that because they have a purpose. And let me tell you what their purpose is. And I'm just going to say it because I'm going to get nailed for this, but I'm just going to say it. I only have to live with this for a week and a half. Marlon Stutzman, not perfect. But Marlon Stutzman, I have never seen somebody who went to such great lengths to make sure that he never stepped over the ethical line. When they were in California, when we were for the Reagan trip, it about drove me crazy. I couldn't pay for his coffee. You know, when I got a free CD from my brain. He's on every night here at 9 o'clock at night.
George Norrie, Buck Sexton?
No.
Brian Kilmeade?
No. No. 9 o'clock at night.
Sean Hannity.
No, good try. He was out there at the library, and he had a new book coming out. Okay, Mark Levin.
Mark Levin,
and
I forgot.
So we were in line with each other, and Levin handed me two books, and he said, "One for you and one for your buddy." There, kind of half joking, and Marlon said, "Okay, we're going to hand one of them back to you, and if you want me to have it, you're going to have to hand it to me directly. I can't have you give it to Pat." And then Pat, give it to me.
You have seen the Super PAC ads that came out with the PACs that support Marlon, directed at Tim and Wendy, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. But what are they saying? Are they saying anything specifically on a position, a date, or a time? The trip they keep talking about to California was our trip.
I've not seen any attack ads about this trip.
Oh, it's in there. Yeah, it's in there. And it's just, I'm fed up. I really am fed up. Because it makes me
fed up with all of it. At the end of the day, take the Super PAC money, don't take the Super PAC money. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like if I had no money to my name and I'm running for office that I wouldn't. I'm not going to sit here and say that and pretend, because I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what kind of offer I would be made. I'd like to say that I could rise above it. But if I really wanted to win the race, I might take that $100,000. I don't know. So I'm not going to sit here and say that. However, if you are going to take Super PAC money, you better make sure you know darn well who's in charge. You better trust them.
Yep.
And if they come out with attack ads against your opponents, flipping own it.
Right.
Be like, yes, they did come out with it. Do I condone the message? I don't know. Answer that question.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think it comes down to. Do you condone the message or not?
Previous congressional race, when you and I did the debate out at our office out in Coventry, okay, it was Gotch and Snyder and Banks, mm-hmm. those three.
Yeah.
That thing was a civil Supreme Court happening compared to what's been going on this year. I can't even believe these are people running for the same office.
Me too, and it frustrates me that they all, and I'm going to say all of them, want to spend their time talking about such frivolous things. I am tired about talking about fundraising thresholds with candidates who didn't make the cut for this debate. Get over it. I am tired of all of these candidates wanting to rebuttal these attack ads. Yeah. Get over it. Yeah. Welcome to American politics. I've said it all along. Don't hate the player, hate the game. And I'm sorry if you're getting beat at it right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're in the wrong sport. Right? If you're
going to
complain,
exactly right.
Like, talk to me about your constituents. Talk to the things that you are going to do or would like to do if and when you reach Washington, D.C. All of these individuals, and I'm just going to say it, and I'm going to say all eight of them. I maybe shouldn't say that. There might be one or two exceptions to that. Have forgotten what truly matters, and that is we the people. Mm-hmm. If one more of these candidates come to me mm-hmm. wanting to talk about money in politics or wanting to talk about super PAC ads, I'm going to lose my mind because that is not what's important.
Well, then you're
going
to have a real hard time in 2 years. Because if the Republicans don't do well this time, I've already got the whole thing filled out. I'm putting your name into the running.
I'm going to have a hard time next week because I know next week it's not going to go away. I know that things will get even more brutal, you know, as May 7th approaches. And I get it. The stakes are high. Whoever wins this primary is going to take the seat.
Yep,
we know that.
That's what's going to happen. Hey, thanks a bunch. Thanks for still being willing to talk about it. Yeah, I'm grounding up Tylenol to put into your
coffee.
Listen
to the end of that debate.
I will do it today. Kayla Blakeslee, there she is, and we'll be back straight ahead. This is Pat Miller on WoWo 92.3 FM, 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
And welcome back. I appreciate, again, Kayla Blakeslee being with us today and being part of a lot of things going on around the station and around the community, speaking primarily now to the midterm elections coming up. She did a stellar job, and some others, at the debate that was Wednesday night out at the campus of Purdue Fort Wayne. Still have trouble saying that, but she did a stellar job as per usual, and she will be a very valued person coming up for the midterms. Don't forget, this coming week on Friday night is the Allen County Lincoln Day dinner, and we'll have Casey down here. He'll be doing his show from here on Friday at the Grand Wayne Center. I will be filling in for Casey on Thursday from here just for Fort Wayne. He's going to be up in South Bend. They have one of their major fundraisers on Thursday. He needs to be there. I certainly understand that. So I will be doing the show on Thursday and then turning around and then having our show ready for Saturday next week. So there you're caught up on everything going on. So Katie Couric, going back and wrapping this up, was there with Bill Maher. And Katie Couric and Bill Maher would normally be like two peas in the same pod, but it sounded like not so much now. You know, she got on these socioeconomic disparities and anti-intellectualism and all that. Look, there is definitely, to some degree, an anti-elitism among Trump supporters, because anti-elitism is the essence of populism. Thomas Sowell and Victor Davis Hanson are intellectuals, whereas racial huckster like Ibrahim X. Kendall fall into the pseudo-intellectual category, the phony intellectual category. Now, this is not to give a pass to legitimate intellectuals, of whom Karl Marx was one. In fact, he was the inspiration for the greatest mass murderers of the previous century. Mao and Stalin were communists, and Hitler was a national socialist. And if we're going to be fair, close to home, I think we have to put our 28th president, Woodrow Wilson, into that category. I mean, before Woodrow's stint in the Oval Office, he was president of Princeton. He not only ushered in the era of progressive politics and a bigger, more activist government, but he also segregated the federal workforce in Washington. Who knew that a progressive could also be a vile racist? For good measure, Couric added this: I mean globalization and the transition from an industrial to a technological society. I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has or resentful. It is such a corroding and bitter, almost bile feeling. So you see, if you support Trump, if we're going to take Katie's statement and then translate it over to what they're talking about, if you are a Trump supporter, you are a mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, hammer-wielding Luddite. You could almost hear, as she's saying it, the basket of deplorables come across her lips. It's almost like Hillary reincarnated. As far as that almost bile feeling, Currie clearly knows what she speaks about. A few years ago, she published a memoir called Going There, a memoir in which, as commentator Piers Morgan notes, she wrote jealously and corrosively and bitterly and bilelessly about her fellow male TV hosts, including Ashley Banfield, Deborah Norville, Diane Sawyer, and Martha Stewart. So even though they were females, they weren't female enough for her. Morgan ended up his comment about Katie Couric saying, I suggest she put a sock in it. Well, you know, it might be too late for the sock, and for Katie Couric and her mouthful, it might be too late to find a sock of substantial size. Philip Wegman is coming up with this. He'll be with us right after the top of the hour. He, of course, is the White House correspondent for Real Clear Politics. Because of a lot of that activity, he was unable to be with us last Saturday. This Saturday, he's going to be right here. So when we come back after the top of the hour, Philip Wegman should be on the Newsmaker line direct to us from inside the Beltway, and we will talk to Philip, and let's get his take on what he feels about some of what's going on relative to debates and press conferences and appearances by the candidates for president. We'll handle again the ones here in the 3rd District, and we'll try to do it as judiciously as we can. As always, so glad you're with us. Remember, you can text us at 46862. That's 46862. Text WOWO first, your question or comment, and it comes right here.
Podcasts by Federated Media.